today on Ag News Daily.
With the Draper system, you could get it to the combine efficiently. But really, the 50-footer is more of an answer on the larger combines, 10-class combines. So we have this larger equipment that needs to be fed. Otherwise, you aren't getting to the boundary of its utilization.
Well, welcome back to the weekly edition of the Ag News Daily Show. Welcome back to the U.S.
Thank you. Did you miss me?
I did. I actually did. And I can see you've already raised your stool up, so you're sitting taller than I am.
Well, I had a great trip. Glad that you and Michelle could fill in while I was out. I was in Vietnam and South Korea, as I mentioned on the show last week, and got to see a lot of really interesting tours, farms, export markets, etc. So
good food?
Really good food.
That's always my favorite part of traveling.
Me too. I agree.
Well, while you were gone, snow cover continued to diminish throughout this area because of warmer temperatures. Several clipper systems will move in through Wednesday, Friday of next week, bringing limited precipitation, mostly breezy conditions to finish this week. A cool down is expected in the eastern areas this weekend behind the departing system. A larger storm midweek next week could bring a band of heavy snow, followed by another warm up. Across the Corn Belt, rain showers remain east of the Mississippi River. Despite clouds and showers, temps have remained above average for highs, Wednesday ranging from 40 to 70 degrees in Michigan near the Ohio River. Snow covered is now mostly limited to the northern tier from North Dakota to the northern parts of lower Michigan. Nationwide, mild to well above average temperatures will persist throughout the end of the work week. So it might be a true spring and not a false spring.
It certainly feels like spring after coming back. But this week, the Environmental Protection Agency has reaffirmed its April 28th commitment to implement year-round E15 sales and E10 fuel sales in Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. EPA Administrator Lee Zedlin said this decision ensures a smooth transition for fuel suppliers and expands consumer access to 15% ethanol-based gasoline in these states. The EPA also plans to consider one-year compliance delays for states that need more time, but requests must be submitted as of earlier this week on Wednesday, February 26th. Meanwhile, Congress is considering bipartisan legislation to allow E15 sales nationwide year-round, with matching bills introduced in both the House and Senate on February 13th.
Well, we also saw Agriculture Secretary of Ag Rawlins announced a $1.1 billion strategy to help with HPAI, protecting U.S. poultry industry and hopefully lowering egg prices. This additional funding is already being provided to indemnify growers that have depopulated flocks. As Secretary outlined in the Wall Street Journal op-ed, the piece stated she has a five-pronged approach that will include an additional $500 million for biosecurity measures, $400 million in financial relief for those affected, and $100 million for vaccine research action to reduce the regulatory burdens and explore temporary import options. With that, the USDA also stated the United States will temporarily import more eggs to help reduce the cost at the grocery store. As a part of that effort, Turkey will increase U.S. egg exports from $70 million to $420 million this year, according to the USDA. American Farm Bureau economist Bert Nelson said that after the announcement, the association supports research to develop a safe, effective, and practical vaccine for HPAI in birds. He stated that they will hopefully contain the spread of this virus as a priority. The National Chicken Council president stated they echoed similar comments, stating the council appreciates the measures, the science-based approach, and the potential use of an effective, applicable vaccine. He stated, adding that the administration's commitment to work with trading partners of the U.S. to minimize any potential negative trade effects for a vaccine should be used. It'd be interesting. I get to record with members of the Iowa Turkey Growers Association this afternoon for their own Turkey Talk podcast. It'll be neat to hear their updates on that story, too.
Well, you can give us a little update next week on the show. But Senators Tammy Baldwin and Chuck Grassley introduced the Farmland Security Act of 2025 earlier this week, aimed at protecting American farmland from secret purchases by foreign investors. Of course, lots of states have this, but nothing at a national level. This bipartisan legislation will build on current law to ensure that all foreign investors, including shell companies who buy American agricultural land, report their holdings, strengthen penalties for those who evade filing, and invest in research to better understand the impact foreign ownership of American farmland has on our agricultural production capacity. Senator Baldwin emphasized this bill's importance, saying, quote, "America's farmland is critical to the health of our rural communities and national security." The USDA reports that foreign ownership of U.S. agricultural land has surged 85% since 2010, now totaling more than 45 million acres, Tanner. So a little bit of good news there to support some, protect some American farmland.
That's right. We also saw the House budget resolution was narrowly approved at a 217 to 215 vote on Wednesday. This calls the House Ag Committee to identify $230 billion in cuts by 2034, a figure that could shape the fate of the next farm bill. This resolution outlines at least $1.5 trillion in spending cuts and up to $4.5 trillion in tax cuts over the next decade, all within a single reconciliation package. The House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn G.T. Thompson has indicated that such cuts would likely require reducing SNAP benefits. However, he also noted that he doubts the Senate would support reductions of this magnitude. So we'll continue to keep an eye on that as it moves forward into the Senate.
I'm not really sure if that's positive for getting a farm bill done this year or not.
It doesn't feel like it.
Well, despite efforts by Canada and Mexico to boost border security and curb fentanyl tracking, President Trump says tariffs on imports from both countries will proceed as planned ahead of the March 4th deadline. During a joint press conference with French President Emmanuel Macron, President Trump told reporters the tariffs are going forward on time, on schedule. Many had hoped the administration would reconsider, as the tariffs would affect over $918 billion in imports from both of those two nations. While President Trump did not specifically mention the March 4th deadline, he later mentioned it on his Truth Social account that we would in fact see those tariffs go into place on March 4th. Canadian Agricultural Minister Lawrence McAuley emphasized the importance of fair trade, warning that tariffs could devastate the agricultural sector. He reassured U.S. farmers and consumers, saying, quote, "We have a one-of-a-kind trading relationship and a long history of supporting each other." Also saw on President Trump's Truth Social account, Tanner, that not only are we going to see tariffs on China and, on Mexico and Canada, but we're also going to see an additional 10% tariff go into effect March 4th on China as well.
That's going to have a lot of impact. We did see the Senate has confirmed Jamison Greer as the new United States Trade Representative with support from 51 Republicans and 5 Democrats. Ag groups quickly welcomed the appointment, highlighting the challenges ahead of him. Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall called it a critical time for American agriculture, warning that these trade imbalances and potential tariffs could bring further economic hardships to the rural communities throughout the U.S. Growth Energy CEO Emily Score also praised the confirmation, emphasizing the importance of expanding the export markets and ensuring a strong voice for farmers and biofuel producers in trade negotiations. Greer, who is a trade lawyer previously, served as the chief of staff for the former USTR Robert Lighthizer during the Trump administration. So we'll continue to watch his first actions as his appointment's been approved.
Well, we saw some new data from the USDA's Agriculture Marketing Service that highlights the increasing role of beef on dairy crossbred cattle in the U.S. beef supply chain. While still limited in scope, the data suggests that the rising use of beef genetics in dairy herds is contributing to higher cattle prices for producers and added value for feedlots and processors. According to a report released by CoBank Knowledge Exchange, beef on dairy cattle are selling for slightly higher prices than traditional beef cattle and significantly more than traditional dairy cattle at slaughter auctions. Their weights also fall between those of beef and dairy breeds, but they retain more value from feeder to slaughter prices than either group. This trend has gained momentum as the U.S. beef cow herd shrinks, making crossbreeding an increasingly important factor in beef production, and certainly one that's interesting to note here on the Ag News Daily podcast this week, as it's not one that I maybe would have considered otherwise.
Yeah, we have a couple of dairies here right in central Iowa that I know participate in implanting embryos that create those cross beef calves. We saw so many great conferences this year so far, and we have the trip coming out to Commodity Classic next. But one of the most recent conversations we had was with Gearinghoff. We're discussing more about their new equipment and how they are approaching innovation in the market space. They have a big reveal, so let's get into that interview right now. And listeners, what another great opportunity down here at the National Farm Machinery Show to bring you some of the latest and greatest news across the ag sector, especially when it comes from our friends at Gearinghoff. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
Before we jump into the news, the exciting updates that we have, remind our listeners who you are and what you do with the business. Craig, I'll start with you, and then we'll go on over.
Sure. I'm Craig Lee. I'm the Director of Sales for North America, and happy to be here.
Awesome. Bill?
Yeah, I'm Bill Dickhout. I'm President for Gearinghoff North America. I'm happy to be here, too.
What a wild ag economy that we've been in over the last 12 to 18 months and the forecasted months ahead of us. Been kind of neat. How has that affected the Gearinghoff business?
Well, I think, you know, like any manufacturer, we have ups and downs, and we just try and manage that to the best we can. You know, we're still producing things. We're still selling things. There's still people buying things and ordering things every day. So it's not to the volume sometimes that we're, you know, used to or like, but there's still business to be had.
I think it's exciting, Bill, that you guys are still pushing innovation forward, especially even still releasing new products. And I've got in my notes here the XFR 50 has been released. Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, in any time in the marketplace, a business is there to listen to what the marketplace has to say. And part of that is to grow and to diminish with the business demands and needs. But a part of it is also to live in two worlds, the worlds of today, what's going on, how do we get the light bill paid, you know, how do we get everybody busy and do the things we need to do. But the other thing is, what do we need to do now to be in that future position? And what that is new products, new ideas, and to realize them. And the XFR 50, that's a basis for a wide-cutting draper. It's the Extreme Flex Razor, 50-foot wide, a basis to also go even wider. Also with the most flex that we've ever had, three-part frame, and also all of the other good things that we've learned with our TrueFlex Draper, which is TrueFlex Razor, which is also a great product. And we've learned some new things, especially for the wider models.
It seems like that's the method or the path that we're headed is wider. 50 foot seems like a long ways out, but we're setting ourselves up to go potentially bigger in the future.
I mean, there's always talk of 60, and you know, I'm sure back in the day when we had 15 foot heads, they were talking about 20. So I don't know that that's ever going to stop. I think at some point, you know, we are going to reach a physical limitation in terms of, you know, being able to maneuver this equipment and transport it and things like that. But we're still talking even bigger than 50 potentially, yes.
And I still love the marketing behind calling that TrueFlex Razor the razor, because it is truly the ability to cut as close to the ground, get as much of that crop as possible. Is that the same type of technology that's in the XFR?
Yes, absolutely. You know, just being bigger, we do have a little bit more flex in terms of inches on the frame, but we kept the 3 inches up and down on the cutter bar. That's worked very well for us. We still have the three section reel that allows us to flex with the frame and keep that reel to cutter bar tine spacing correct all the way through the field. So we utilize a lot of the same things. Put a few creature comforts in this XFR, maybe some lights in the belt area. Put a floating auger in it, but yet we're going to do that in the TFR as well. So that auger will flex about 2 inches if you get a big, you know, big crop mass or wad or something. Rather than just plug up, it'll give a little flex and hopefully go on through the machine.
Yeah, that sounds like you definitely kept the harvester in mind, the producer in mind as you think through this. Is your competition coming out with larger draper heads as well?
There are some already out in the marketplace.
There are some there.
I bet you yours flexes more.
Absolutely.
Yes. Correct.
You guys are too modest. I was setting that one up, teeing that one up for you. But I do. I love that it's every time we've talked, you've had a customer-focused mentality.
Yes.
When you go to the engineering side of things, when you build the product that's built to last, I mean, there's never been a question with the Gearing Off name as far as that regards.
Exactly. And if our customers are not successful with our products, then they're not going to be happy with our products.
And we can't sell a product that's not going to hold up and do the job, or we'll be out of business. And, you know, that's one thing. Gearing Off, I'd like to mention, has been around for 145 years now, since 1880. And we're still family owned by a descendant of the founder, you know. That's very unusual in today's world.
That is.
Especially probably in the farm equipment business. But we couldn't do that if we didn't stand behind the product and support the customer and the dealer.
Now you got me wondering, though, because 50 foot is large. Mm-hmm. And all we've done with crop yields in the last couple of years is continue to boost yields and boost the biomass that comes along with these. Mm-hmm. Are we going to be able to get all that material to the combine efficiently?
Yeah, with the Draper system, you can get it to the combine efficiently. But really, the 50-footer is more of an answer on the larger combines, 10-class combines. So we have this larger equipment that needs to be fed. Otherwise, you aren't getting to the boundary of its utilization.
Yep, the max capacity.
Correct.
Yeah, it's sort of a double-edged coin there to some degree. Some of these combines were to the point there that they needed more head, you know, to feed them and work efficiently, and we've kind of met that market. But also, you know, we have a wider center belt now. We've got the widest center belt in the industry at 87 inches. So we've taken all those things into mind because, yes, we've got a big combine. They got a big appetite, and we've got to be able to feed it.
Yeah, and they've got a big feeder house, to your point.
Right.
But
absolutely.
Not just the drapers, also on the corn heads. So even some of those, we've had some, let's say, good experiences with the wider heads.
And I appreciate you sharing, again, the history of Gearing Off and how long the quality has been manufactured. But there's been some new news coming out of a expansion.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so our facility in St. Cloud, Minnesota, that's our U.S. facility, we started that to better serve the U.S. market and the Canadian market. And we started off with 30-inch corn heads in a couple different styles. And we've expanded that over time. We're building the drapers there as well. And even, let's say, times of fluctuation, we do know that there's a path forward with our products to where even though we may have a downturn in the market, which is normal for ag, mm-hmm. We have to remember that. We just have to prepare and do the things we need to do. But at some point in the future, there's going to be the upturn. And we were capacity constrained basically on the physical size of our facility. But right now, this also gives us more opportunity to better serve the marketplace and not just more of, let's say, the standard products that we made, but also include 20-inch and 22-inch row spacings and other products that we sell a lot of in the United States so that we can be more flexible, more adaptive to the needs of our customers in the marketplace. They need a machine at the end of the year, then we need to be able to get it to them.
Yeah, again, you've put the producer, the customer, at the forefront. You know, that's takes a large, significant investment of Gearing Off. Yeah. You're investing in the future of your company, but also in the future of your customers.
Correct. And it's a $5 million investment, and that's basically just the building envelope. There are also things that are going to be investing going in to the building that we're going to need.
That'd be cool. I think we need to get the Ag News Daily team up there once it's completed, once the expansion's done.
Yep.
Take a look at the new facility.
Yeah, definitely. We'll show you a couple of nice things.
Well, I know all we do is get to tease the listeners, so I appreciate the opportunity to do that. If they want to go learn more about it or reach out to somebody on your sales team, how best do they find you guys?
Probably where everybody goes nowadays, the simplest thing is just the web, you know, and gearinghoff.com. And there they'll find either a dealer locator where they can see who's a dealer close to them if they aren't familiar with that, Or we also list our territory managers on there, and you can get a hold of them, and they can help pair you up with a dealer or answer some product questions. And we're a pretty accessible company. We don't mind talking to the producers, but also work very well through our dealer network, which is about 500 locations across the country. So there's probably one close to you. If not, we'll figure out how to work with you.
That's great. Do we miss anything you want to cover today before we wrap up?
Don't know, Bill. It's
just come visit us at the show.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. I love that. No, it's great. It'll be great because the rest of this trade show season is coming up. I'm sure you'll be out at Commodity Classic in Denver.
We will. Sure.
So we can send people your way there as well. Guys, appreciate it as always. It's always fun catching up with you.
Right.
It seems like for me, it's always in passing at these trade shows, but I'm excited to have a conversation too once we shut the mics up.
All right.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for that conversation. Glad I got to sit down with them. Delaney, what have we been seeing happening in the markets this week?
A lot of news in the markets this week, Tanner. First up, the USDA Ag Outlook Forum happened earlier this week and wrapped up on Friday, giving the markets some fresh fodder to chew on regarding acreage. The USDA raised corn acre estimates from 93.5 million, like the average trade guess was expecting, up to 94 million, with an expected yield of 181. So a large production here ahead, probably for our corn crop. Meanwhile, the forum cut soybean acres, projecting just 84 million acres of soybeans. On Thursday, the grain markets gave up most of the rally we saw after the January WASDE report, with May corn finishing down 13 cents and December down 5. Soybeans also ended 4 cents lower in both old and new crop, and Chicago wheat the biggest loser with 17 cents off the board, followed by Minneapolis and KC down 13 cents. As we mentioned earlier, President Trump also added some clarification about those upcoming tariffs that go into effect on March 4th. The 10% tariff on Chinese goods was the shock to the markets. Traders and the markets were not expecting that confirmation. And although China has yet to put anything into action, they did share comments that they were going to take, quote, necessary countermeasures. So we'll likely see some sort of retaliation from them here soon. And lastly, corn planting is now officially underway as growers in Texas look to start their 2025 season. It's only a matter of time, Tanner, before we see growers here in the Midwest start to have planters rolling as well.
Yeah, a lot of pictures, a lot of videos across social media, especially X, showing planters getting pulled into the shop, getting them out and ready to go. Talked to a couple of producers down in the South Carolina region, which we're hoping to get their wheels turning by the middle of next week, depending upon what those systems look like as the weather moves through. So it's kind of neat. Again, Delaney and I and Michelle will all be out at Commodity Classic starting this weekend. So if you're out there, come find us. We will do most of our interviews at the John Deere booth, but we'll be walking around and attending various sessions ourselves. I look forward to being out there.
I do too. It's kind of the last event of the season before we do hit planters, and looking forward to catching up with some of our listeners there, Tanner.
That's right. So come up, say hi, but what do you say, Delaney, for today? Is it time to let them go?
Let's let them go.